Once the Tzar acquired a canonical status, the tendency was in the direction of the Ashkenazi custom, that is, to put on tefillin and even make a bracha, la'aniach in bracha kedat al-ashpa'atu, v'hinei b'ashpa'at divrei ha-zohar, under the influence of the Zohar, sh'ra'ah b'hanachat tefillin b'cholosho me'ir isur gamur, who saw in the putting on of tefillin during Chol HaMoed a strict prohibition, an attack on the upper celestial worlds, nefachal galgal, the wheel turned, ad shebedarot ha-smukim l'geirush, in the generations close to the expulsion from Spain, ne'elam l'gamwe ha-minhag l'hamiyah, the custom to put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed disappeared entirely. Rav Yitzhak Karo and his nephew, Rav Yosef, they testified to what they saw. But they ignore the actual evolution of the custom. So that they exaggerated the influence of the Zohar. As if it had uprooted a custom in Spain from all ancient generations. No, but this has nothing to do with that. It just simply, eventually, the Zohar acquired influence. To summarize where we're up to up until now, there was an ancient dispute between Ashkenazic and Sephardic custom as to the putting on of tefillin during Chol HaMoed. The Rosh managed to influence to some extent the old Sephardic custom not to put on tefillin and change it in the direction of putting on the tefillin. There was a tendency in Spain to gradually more and more accept the Ashkenazic custom of the Rosh, but this receded under the influence of the Zohar. And the Rav Yitzchak Karo and Rav Yosef Karo, at the end of the 15th, beginning of the 16th century, were relating what they saw in their own eyes, namely that the custom of putting on tefillin during Chol HaMoed disappeared. They attributed this to an overturning by the Zohar of an ancient tradition, which was really not the case, because in fact they did not pay close attention to the historical evolution. Okay. Fine.
They didn't read Katz's stuff.
They didn't read Katz's stuff. Exactly. Now, let's see what happens after this period. That is now, and the place that Professor Katz turns his attention to is what was happening in Italy. Because in Italy one had mixes of communities. Originally one had first of all the original Roman Jews, one had the Ashkenazic Jews who descended down into Italy from the north, and of course after the expulsion from Spain one had large numbers of Spanish exiles moving into Italy, and therefore one had communities in which the practice itself was not stable. Let's read Professor Katz on page 108. Things were different. Let's perhaps read the paragraph before. Let's go back to page 107 and start with the first paragraph in this section. The publication of the Shulchan Aruch did not put an end, as is well known, to differences of opinion and customs on the questions of ritual law. And similarly, the dispute about the question of whether you wear tefillin or not during Chol HaMoed continued to exist, even though the author of the Shulchan Aruch identified with the strong warning of the Zohar. So long as the disputes and customs were associated with different regimes, different areas, the dispute just was a continuation of tradition. like all differences of opinion from different communities, and certainly the many differences that existed between the Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim. We already heard, in fact we mentioned this in the very first year, the tshuva of the Marshal, in which he rejects this the influence of the Kabbalah on any halakhic dispute, saying that after all, if Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai were around today, we wouldn't listen to him, because in most issues the halakha was decided against him. And he cites the custom of putting on tefillin during Chol HaMoed as proof to the fact that we don't pay any attention to the decisions of the Zohar on matters of ritual law. Similarly, the Rama cites and mentions in his annotation to the Shulchan Aruch, who the Shulchan Aruch, after all, simply certifies the decision of the Zohar, Amu B'chol Glilotenu, in all of our regions, the Rama adds, Menichim B'cholom O'edom V'vachim Aleim K'divrei Harash. You don't make a loud bracha, you make a soft bracha, somehow or other out of some modicum of respect to the Rav Mishkan. And the Ashkenaz, therefore, continued to exist, and the concession about not making the bracha out loud in the B'nai Shrek Chesed was born without any connection with the influence of the Zohar, but rather out of respect for those other opinions who said that you shouldn't put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed. But basically, throughout all of this period, the Ashkenazi custom was to continue to put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed and to make a bracha.
Somebody said it out loud instead of me.
That's fine.
Would that give a confirmation to the Sanctus?
Okay.
Would that be a reason why you said it loud?
No, not at all. The only thing was that, for some reason, the only concession that the Rama was willing to make is that you make the bracha a little more softly. It has no halakhic significance whatsoever.
I thought maybe people might say yes.
Well, what's wrong with that? You should, according to the Rama. Shoneh haya hamatzav b'machozot kemo Italia. Matters were different in regions like Italy, where people who had various customs, with conflicting customs, came into one social unit. Some were influenced by the Zohar in Italy, and this is evidenced from the words of Rabbi Azriel Vienna, which we wrote before, and certainly from the response from someone from the next generation, Rabbi Moshe Provenzali, who died in 1575. In his Hilchot Tefillin, which we still have only in manuscript, like most of his works, Rav Moshe went at great lengths to prove that there is no basis to believe that Chol HaMoed is not the time of Tefillin. In addition to the proofs from the various Talmuds that the earlier authorities brought before him, he established the principle that when there's no kiddush at the beginning of the day and there's no havdalah at the end of the day, there is no particular holiness attached to Chol HaMoed, and therefore its law, as far as tefillin are concerned, is not like Shabbos and Yom Tov. This great Talmud Chacham understood, of course, the words of the Zohar, on which all of the previous decisions, recently previous decision has been made, that not only relieved you from putting on tefillin during Chol HaMoed, but actually prohibited you to do it. Rabbi Provenzali's response was that we don't rely on this language of the Zohar, and we should see it as some error of a student who inserted some fake passage into the Zohar. It's not possible that this can be true, he says, because the whole idea makes no sense from the very beginning. He therefore did not completely reject the authority of the Zohar, but he sort of circumvented the problem that was connected to it. His enemy, Rabbi Menachem Azariah Mifano, we read in the first year the attack that Rabbi Menachem Azariah Mifano made on Moshe Provenzali, went out after some time to argue against his words, said that he tried to be smart and argue against the Zohar with with various words, Pen Yelavuz Beinei Kalei Ha'am Katnei Amunah V'Nimtza Shem Shamayim Mitchalel. The meaning of these words are apparently that Rav Moshe Feben Zali added words, unwritten words, oral words, which included denying the truth of the Zohar and its holiness. Whatever it is, the practical direction of Rav Feben Zali was to stand guard against those who wanted to change the local custom. And certainly it was easy for him to maintain his position, even according to those who respected the Zohar and gave it authority. Because that his intent was practical is clear from the fact that his Psak HaLacha in the issue of Tilin Shel HaChomei, he summarized in a separate opinion, which he attached to his Tshuvot, and it was circulated intervention or the intervention of others in a separate document. From this particular document, we know that his opinion was exactly the opposite from that of Yosef Karo. He required the putting on of tefillin and kol ha'moed with a bracha as a mitzvah, which is a complete obligation, and he did not even calm down until he said to someone who refrains from putting on tefillin during kol ha'moed has the same status as someone who refuses to do a mitzvah asay, the zadon, and his punishment is that he should receive stripes until he rejects his, changes his mind. Yes?
With this kind of violent language that we saw in Moshe Mid, Kusi, if that's his name, and all these other people.
Well, but Moshe Kusi wasn't using any violent language.
He says that you'll be punished in hell, and he doesn't say that.
Yeah, but...
Okay, so... But
that's not particularly violent.
Yeah,
we'll get to some violent language.
Well, now they're talking about stripes. What I guess I'm saying is this a kind of a new thing to the Middle Ages? Did they say this kind of thing at these...
The issue of whether you're going to be served some time in hell for this, that, or the other thing is... You can find all the way back. That's not the issue.
But for small,
what you regard as small. I mean, so, but, okay. Let's read on Katz's page 111, the paragraphs before the break. The anger that Rav Nachum Azariah had on Rav Moshe Feben Zali was as a result of the disregard of the holiness of Chol HaMoed, from which you get the opinion that perhaps it's just almost equal to an ordinary day without any holiness. Without Abdullah, the Lech Mishnah, Ein Raya Kal Shekulam Machshirei Kudosh HaYom Bavakavanahi, Sheim And now here's the quote that I want to get to. Umish eino yodea ma ben kiddush hayom lekiddushat hayom lo bavo yavin masha ben shirat hayom lashir chadash liyatid lavo v'gam mizeh anu tzrichim lidivrei agadah shehem mkotzei mkotzei shehem mkotzo agadol betorah v'im yodeinu tam lahorah sheyesh shaveh maspik bekom akom elem hin af shalom amu yichnu bekom. The last sentence, his explanation is that the Kabbalic tradition, which are known to the people who know mysteries, it alone is equipped to give any reason for the mitzvot, and therefore this one must guide in anything that has to do with the fulfillments of the decisions regarding commandments and their details, even halacha l'maaseh. So at the time of the Nachum Fano, we already see that the Kabbalah has, so to speak, at least in the eyes of the Kabbalists, taken over as a primary deciding factor, even when it contradicts halachic practices. Ein tzarech lomar שחבטתו של שום חכם לא יכלה לאחד את המנהגים שהיו תלויים במסורת המעשית מצד אחד ובזרם הספירטואלי מצד אחר. No particular opinion could unite the various different customs which were based on practical tradition on the one hand and some spiritual stream on the other. התפשטות ההוראה על פי הזוהר הייתה תלויה במידת תוקפם של מנהגי המקום מצד אחד. The question of the spread of decisions based on the Zohar were based on the strength of the local customs on the one hand, ובעומק השפעת הקבלה מצד אחר, and to the other extreme on the depth of the influence of the Zohar. השפעה זו הורגשה כידוע ביותר מראשית המאה ה-17 והגיעה גם למוזי יהודי אשכנז המובהקים. The influence of the Zohar really took off in the 17th century and even reached into the innards of the Ashkenazi communities. Rabbi Yosef Yusuf Ahad, Machavro Shul Sefer Yosef Omitz Befrankfurt, היה אחד הראשונים שקלט את ההדים שהגיעו לאשכנז מרכז הקבלה בצפן. He was the first to see the influence waves which reached Germany from the center of the Kabbalah Tzfat. B'inyan ha-nidonu kotev, he writes on the question that we're discussing, b'chol ha-moed yesh isur ha-nachat tefillin al-pi ha-kabbalah. There is a prohibition to putting on tefillin according to the Kabbalah. U'miachar she'ein lanu esek b'nistarot, since we have no dealings with mysterious matters, lo nehigen hachi, we don't follow this custom. מכל מקום נראה בעיניי שלא לברך עליהם, ובזה אפשר לצאת מידי ספק. Not to make a ברכה, because that way you can avoid the ספק. הסתייגות מן העיסוק במסתרות, a withdrawal from dealing with mysterious matters, היינו להגות בקבלה על דרך עיון. Not to study the Kabbalah, לא מנעה איפה התחשמות ממשקלה והתחשמות בבהרותיה. Did not prevent giving some weight to its laws. The pshara zu nata gam Rav David Segal ba'ala etore zahab, the author of the Taz, shekein ayin v'divrei ha'rama m'chayit et ha'anacha, nireh de mikol makom, Taz writes, mi shemenichin b'lo b'racha b'chol ha'moed shapira. Someone who puts on tefillin in the chol ha'moed without making the bracha at all, does well. V'hazor ha'machlik v'od v'onesh ha'anachatam. The Zohar exaggerates the punishment to someone who puts on tefillin during Kol HaMoed.
Whether without
a Well, let's remember. Originally, the issue was simply a matter of doubt. Do you not have to put on tefillin during Kol HaMoed? The Zohar converted this issue of doubt into a terrible prohibition. You're changing the cosmic balance of power if you put on tefillin during the Chol HaMoed. So therefore, those who came under the influence of the Zohar regarded the putting on of tefillin during Chol HaMoed as a serious sin. But the Ashkenazi custom was to put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed. And eventually, by the time of the Taz, you know, had this issue been the way the Taz conceived of it, namely that this is a halakhic dispute, and therefore you can go l'chumrah. You can put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed and not make a bracha. But of course, the Taz's resolution doesn't satisfy anybody here. On the one hand, those people who reject the Kabbalah as a source would simply continue to put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed with a bracha. And those people who do attribute to the Zohar canonical status, to use Professor Katz's words, then would have to agree that putting on a tefillin during Chol HaMoed is not only not obligatory, but is a great evil, and therefore putting them on with a bracha doesn't resolve anything. What's the problem?
How is that a problem?
What?
By putting on tefillin and no bracha. Why is that a problem?
What? Let's repeat.
That's a compromise.
Suppose you had a doubt as to whether you're supposed to put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed. Then on the one hand, you would put them on, that would be machmir. On the other hand, you wouldn't make a bracha because you're worried that it would be a bracha levatal. So from the point of view of a strict halachist, if you're in doubt as to whether you should put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed, you put them on, but you don't make a bracha. From the point of view of classical halacha, this is a perfectly reasonable decision in the face of doubt. The problem is that it doesn't resolve anything here because according to the Zohar, it's not merely that you're not supposed to put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed, but putting on tefillin during Chol HaMoed is a big sin. Therefore, putting on tefillin and not making the bracha doesn't alleviate this particular problem.
Bracha maybe would give to a sort of an affirmation of a declaration that you're agreeing with.
But doesn't matter. If you put it on...
I don't know.
Now we come to one of Professor Katz's main points. Ad tkufat ha-chassidut, until the rise of the Hasidism, hekpidu b'kihilot ha-ashkenaziyot al noach e'achad shal b'nei ha'eda. The Ashkenazi communities insisted on uniform practice. V'lo haya ole al hada'at. No one could conceive of the idea shal ba'ei beit ha-kneset e'achad yitchalku b'min ha-gad min ha-gam. There should be different customs in the same synagogue. Miktzatam ya'amdu b'tfilin al-rosham u'miktzatam yitpalalu b'litvim. Ad heichan higyu ha-dvarim nitam l'mod m'ma she-siper Rav Yaakov Vilna שליחה של ירושלים בתחילת המאה ה-18. But to see to what extent matters things, to what extent this issue of uniformity that actually reached, is a story that Rav Yaakov Vilna reports from the early 18th century, writing to Rav Emanuel Chayriki on the custom, on his custom when he arrives during the holiday period to the Ashkenazic communities. Rav Yaakov said, "Davak v'kavalat ha'ari u'min ha'gera." He was completely devoted to the Ari and its customs, and he even was suspected on some Sabbatean tendencies. Rav Akiva Muvan isur b'hanachat tefillin b'chol ha'olam lay. Therefore, he saw it was a serious sin to put tefillin on during chol ha'olam. Afilu ma ya'aseh v'lo yechta. What should he do and not sin? Fa'af lo yo'orer al atzmo et chamat b'nei ha'nefilot, and on the other hand, not attract the enmity of the kehilot, hu heiniach tefillin, he put on fake tefillin. Ach hekpid la'heiniach b'tzura shalafi ha'alacha ein yotzin mehem yedei korva. He put them on in such a way that he didn't really put on tefillin. Okay. Not only without a bracha, but with a... Well, it's
Vilna.
No.
Rav Yaakov Vilna, right?
Afilu v'nogea l'Italia shobu udalim v'al v'chiluke min ha'adam zebet sadze anu yodim sh'notim achrei ha'zoa lo hiziu v'rov ha'kilot v'alfiya v'beit ha'kneset v'lifilin. They would not dare to come into the Beit Knesset without tefillin on Chol HaMoed. V'ayu she'motzin tachbula, they found some way around this. Hei minichu tefillin she'ein psulot l'fi hadin. They put on posel tefillin. Which were v'yatzu yidei habriyot nuli lavo al divrei hazor. Eitza zu mitna l'peirush al yidei Rabbi Gabriel pant v'mulio v'machloket shel shnat 1796 sh'nigel l'halan, so we'll come to in a moment, l'eizi yechidim ha'choshishim l'divrei hazor. He advised various individuals who were really worried about the strictures of the Zohar la'asot atzman t'hilu menichim ולפי אמת לא יהיו הפרשיות בתוך הבתים. Now put on tefillin, which are empty.
So you have your special chalomoid tefillin. Your special chalomoid tefillin.
Special chalomoid fake tefillin.
This is like crossing your fingers.
Right. So special chalomoid fake tefillin to put on so that on the one hand they didn't want to arouse the ire of the community to appear in the Beit HaKnesset without tefillin, but on the other hand they knew it was a big sin put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed, so therefore they had special fake Chol HaMoed tefillin made so that they could appear as if they're putting on tefillin.
Do they have two pairs, both Rosh and Rebbe to Tom?
Thank you. Okay. Okay. So that shows you two things. First of all, to the extent in which the fear of the Zohar struck roots in the minds of the people who followed the Kabbalah, that it was some kind of great sin put on tefillin during Chol HaMoed, and on the other hand, the existence of strict unity within a synagogue which would not allow for deviance from established synagogue practice. So therefore, these people made these... That story was in Italy, okay? Let's read from Professor Katz's page.
It's possible that this practice of forcing such strict uniformity came in response to practices. I mean, it sounds like at least prior to that, there were always legitimate.
You're raising a very important point. So let me tell you what Professor Katz's opinion is, and then I'll tell you what my opinion is. Professor Katz's opinion, that's one of his main themes, is that until, indeed there were differences in from communities, but that the traditional community, that is the community until the breakdown of the community in the 18th century, the traditional community was monolithic. That is, the community exercised relatively strict control over the behavior of its individuals, and therefore an individual might sin. You know, there might be criminals in any community, therefore not everybody necessarily adheres to the law, but there was no tolerance of, or no even thought of, it's not just that there was no tolerance of deviation from community practice. The idea of changing the community practice was something which was inconceivable. So for Professor Katz, there was this so-called traditional society, which may have existed, say, from the 12th century until the 18th century.
The ghetto.
He calls it Out of the Ghetto, that's the name of one of his famous books, but he is making, his main theme, which runs throughout his work, not only in this very important article, is that there was a traditional community which was monolithic, at least as far as public behavior was concerned, and that the norms were established and fixed. They may change over time, slowly, by accretion, by loss, and so on, but there was no tolerance for public deviation, especially on the issue of worship or public behavior. Therefore, says Professor Katz, it's inconceivable that in a traditional synagogue there could be different groups of people behaving differently. And it is true that there were communities, especially in the Balkans and especially in Italy after the expulsion from Spain, in which different communities moved in, but they established their own synagogues. So you might find in the same city a Sephardic synagogue in which they would not put on tefillin during Talmud, and an Ashkenazic synagogue in which they would put on tefillin during Talmud, but there was no possibility of compromise. Therefore, you have this weird story of Shliach or Mashiach from Eretz Yisrael pretending to put on tefillin but not really putting it on when he visits the Ashkenazic communities in Europe, and even the more hilarious story of advice given to people to have fake tefillin so that they can put them on in shul to appear as if they're putting on tefillin, but on the other hand they're empty, so that therefore they have not violated the strictures of the Zohar against putting on tefillin during Talmud. Yes?
Does Katz seems to suggest in the paragraph above that not only was the Zohar canonized, so to speak, but now the Kabbalah of
the Rabbinic Kabbalah was also becoming canonized.
That was another source of
tension. There was another source of tension, absolutely. I'm running out of time, so I will let you read the hilarious story of Immanuel Chai Ricky, who was, again, a typical example of some, well, maybe you should read a little bit of it, because we know such... cases. 12 שנה לאחר ניסיון הפשרה של אוחניה קזיס פרצה מחלוקת בעיר גלציה. On Katz's page 114, my page 216, 12 years after this attempted compromise, a dispute broke out in Gorizia, where the local teacher wanted to impose his view on the community that they should stop from their custom of putting on tefillin during Chol-a-Moed, and at least part of the community listened to him. Later on, we will find out who was this person and what type of a person was he. At the moment, let's follow the footsteps of his opposition that regarded him as a yanik v'lo chachim, a young ignoramus. They only knew that he was from the Ir Revigo. But the opposition did not arise from the attitude towards the instigator, but because of a worry about the consequences of his act. A situation was created in which, at least in the eyes of the majority of the community, was still considered unbearable. To the Beit Knesset Echad, that in one single synagogue, halalu matirim v'halalu osrim, halalu menichim v'halalu ein menichim. inconceivable that you could have in one shul people davening some with tefillin on and some without tefillin. Ketiro shel harav of Shimon Morfogo yidid v'retzia v'yotah shel harav of Rofeimu v'osam ba'ankon. Morfogo haya rishon shetarei v'makloket v'nazach v'mlamei. He was the first person that intervened in this thing and censured the teacher. Kinirei al pi bakashatero shel mishinu v'mir molarato. Harav Morfogo Yadaki Amalameid Mirvigo Mislameh Aldat Mukubalim Bayatsa Epola Hokiah Kafilo Ramunaka Mazari Mifano Shetside Bisu Anakatil Mikolamoid Lovatsa Elalat Ticket and Nova Higaman Epise. He only wanted to justify those who had the custom of not putting on Tilim during Kolamoid. Ach Lola Hatil at Piscosha Hakmazim Hamaxikim Ramasarat of Ufa. He complained about the custom and so on, and it's interesting to. But we're running a bit out of time, so on page 116, Shmo shel hamlamed, the name of the Mlamed she'orer et ha'sa'ara b'goretzia, lo mitfaresh b'divrei ha'meshivim. His name is not made explicit in the tshuvas that were written about this period.
Where is
Goretzia? In Italy, I suppose. I don't know exactly. Ulam zeh mtonik va'azeh mikvar v'lo tikbuk. His identity has been firmly established. Ein ze elo Rafael Emanuel Chayriki. Rabbi Emanuel Chayriki, mikubal shenispasem liachar zman b'skut sfarav hachashuvim b'hakabala. A person who became famous later because of his books on Kabbalah. Al todot chayav shalriki anu lamedim mipit shelo b'hakdama l'sifo Chazon Tzion. You know his biography from the introduction to one of his books. Hum nolad b'Ferrara. He was born in Ferrara in 1688 and grew up in Rovigo. When he was about 20, he was accepted as a student in the house of Yitzhak Chayetz. He was accepted in the house of Yitzhak Chayetz, who was a wealthy man in Goretzia, as a tutor for the children. After 2 years, he went to Reggio in order to learn Kabbalah from Rabbi Binyamin HaKohen, the student of Moshe Zakut. But when he couldn't find him in town, he returned to Goretzia, and this time he was accepted as a teacher for the elite in the city and in the nearby towns. His desire to learn Kabbalah took him once again out of the town for a year and a half, and after much wandering for about 6 years, they returned him to Goretzia to teach them book learning as before. In the meanwhile, he managed to finish his studies in Kabbalah, whether by himself or from someone else, and he received his smichat rabbanit, his rabbinical ordination, only afterwards. But nevertheless, he regarded himself as an authority to direct the community and to arouse them to accept the customs of the Kabbalah. As we said, this is something that took place in 1716. That year, he managed to publish his first book. And while he was living in Goretzia, he wrote his second book, Choshev Machshavot, Shel Chidushim Al Tanach, B'Shas B'Derech Hagadah, Mamat Tefillin D'Mariyamu. This book was published only 15 years later. In the meantime, all of this... at any event, you get the picture of some guy who's become an adherent of the Kabbalah and is running around now to convert the four Balapatim of these various communities to his... point of view. Let's skip a little bit. To page 120. Because the machloket al dvar hanachat tefillin b'cholo shel moed b'Italia ein makfilut b'merkaza shel Europa b'mizracha. We don't have any analogs to this dispute in the 17th or 18th century Italy, in Central Europe or in Eastern Europe, even though the Kabbalah spread into this, but in the Eastern Europe, in Poland and Litva, after a while, the old custom began to be challenged, first of all on the basis of Hasidism, and secondly because of the critical attitude of the Gaon of Vilna, of the Grot, as far as halakhic practice is concerned. Rav Yisrael Baal Shem Tov Mesupar B'Shekhei Pshash Shetel Shikalato, even before he became famous, he refrained from putting on tefillin and Chol HaMoed. And when his son-in-law asked him, he said, "Ki ra'iti b'sefer Tait shekol mi shemeiniach tefillin b'Chol HaMoed chayav nistam." I saw it in a Yiddish book that anyone who puts on tefillin during Chol HaMoed is guilty of a capital offense. Bein im nirah b'masorat zu uvda, whether we regard this as a true story, bein im lo nirah b'ela b'itui safruti b'magamon b'pashetet, or whether we just simply regard it as a literary fable attached to a spreading custom, he techashev la'idut al kritat ha-minhag ha-mushtat al ha-masorat ha-kabbalot ba'adat ha-chassidim. We see that the Hasidim managed to accept the Kabbalistic doctrine and it became widespread. Va'amnam, divrei ha-gra, on the other hand, the opinions of the Gaon of Vilna mufurashim b'vi'aru l'shulchan aruch ha-chaim lamed aleph, kedarko, as is his custom, mevaseis ha-gra et psikato al ha-iyun b'divrei ha-talmidun, the Gra, as was his custom, bases his halakhic decisions on his own personal investigation of the Talmud and giving his own opinions, which he regarded as equal to those who preceded him. Bishanim ka'achonim. Kazachor hishgilu ba'alei ha-tosot et yisodo shemunhag ha-ashkenaz v'yikar al ha-raya min ha-yoshalmi mo'ed katanim. The Tosfot based the Ashkenazi custom of putting on tefillin during Chol HaMoed from the Yerushalmi, Shem Mefurash, Sherav Vavarav Baruch Hanah Hirshu Lichtol Tefillin B'Chol HaMoed Lezarech Hayom. Nitan Haya Lidchot Vayazu Bahanafa Shomim Eilu Savu Kamo Kama Benatanaim She'ach Shabbat V'Yom Tov Heim Zman Tefillin. You could say that these are people who are of the opinion that all holidays require tefillin. Ela Shebetosfot Dachu Hanach Azu Mekeban She'slaver Lehem Sherav But the Vilna Gaon rejects this argument that Rav should have followed the conclusion that one doesn't put on tefillin during Yom Tov. Umavatel et araya min ha-Yerushalmi mikoveya ki ein ledeya zu ikar klav. This has no basis whatsoever. The proof from the Yerushalmi. לכאורה, בו הערעור על המנהג האשכנזי המקובל משני כיוונים סותרים. It would seem that the attack on the traditional Ashkenazi custom of putting on tefillin during Chol HaMoed is coming from two opposite directions, from the Kabbalah on the one hand and from the Vilna Gaon, who is exercising his critical acumen on the other. הכיוון המיסטי, the mystical direction, Ba'akivun ha-bikorti, and the direction of critical analysis.
So the Vilna Gaon did not put tefillin on?
Right. And when Professor Katz is saying you might think, and this is his main, one of his main points in this article, you might think that one is dealing here with an attack on a custom from two opposite directions, the mystical direction of the Zohar, and the anti-mystical, but the very critical influence of the Vilna Gaon, who's going to analyze everything in terms of what the true meaning of the text is without any later accretions. So it would seem, says Professor Katz, that one is dealing here with an attack on tradition from two opposite directions. La'amito shel davar, but the truth of the matter is, v'shneihem reka hispeli meshutaf, but both the attack on the traditional custom of putting on tefillin from the mystical direction of the Hasidim and from the misnagdic but critical direction of the Vilna Gaon have a common historical basis. The weakening of the foundations of the traditional society. Mosdot tarpe mashma. Foundations, by foundations I mean two things. Mitzad echad, irgunei ha-kihilot ha-mafakhim al-chayei ha-yachid ha-tzibur al-pi ikonot ha-masoret. The failure, the collapse of the traditional societal institutions of the traditional society who were able to maintain control over the behavior of the individual, and the self-understood trust shel hador litvusei ha-masoret shehayu yisod mosad utnai lahamshacha ha-bildim ha-olam. The trust of the individual in the authority of tradition was also shaken, says Professor Katz, in the 18th century. בשיא תוקפן של המוסדות במובן הכפול הזה, at the height of the strength of the foundations of traditional society in the periods from the 15th to the 17th century in Poland and Lithuania, לא הייתה תנועה עוקרת הרים כתנועת החסידות מסוגלת להיאחז בחברה. No movement like the Hasidic movement had a possible chance of achieving any kind of success in such a traditional society. אך אותו שעה, אך את ההסתייגות מגבוסי המסורת על הערכים, היסוד חזרה למקורות הראשונים כביכול, but similarly, a, so to speak, in quotation marks, return to the true sources which the Vilna Gaon represented would equally have been impossible, says Professor Katz, in a traditional society. לא הייתה בגדר האפשר. ספק אם המוסדות המפתחים היו סובלים מפיתוחו של מוסך התפילה ונוהג אפילו במית בדש בורדי כשל הגרא. They wouldn't have tolerated even the slightest change in the practice of the liturgy, even in an isolated synagogue like the Vilna Gaon's his own. They wouldn't have allowed the Vilna Gaon to introduce his own changes into his synagogue. בספק אם הנטייה לפיתוחו של מוסד כזה עשויה הייתה להתגלות. גדולי ההלכה של הימים ההם, the great halachic authorities in those days, ראו עצמם שומרי חומרות המסורת ודפוסי המקובלים בחברתם. They regarded themselves as the guardians of tradition in the imprints that were accepted in their society.
How did the rush do what he did? Whatever he achieved something. He at least changed the minhag in his own shul, if nothing else.
The rush.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That was a traditional society, wasn't it?
Yeah. You're arguing with Professor Katz, not with me.
I understand.
I mean, first of all, the case of the rush was rather different because he was bringing his own customs from Germany into Spain. But you should ask, not so much from the rush, but from someone like the Baal HaMor, who actually came from Catalonia, studied in Provence, returned to Catalonia and changed the custom there. So I agree with, my point is that I don't agree with Professor Katz. I don't believe that the traditional societies were ever so stable as he portrays them. But let's give him a chance to say what he wants, and I agree with you that I think that he's taking his point too far. But Professor Katz's position here is that both, and on this he's certainly correct, that the society, the changes as envisioned by the Vilna Gaon, just like the changes envisioned by the Hasidim, neither of them represented traditional Jewish society. That is, as we know, in many cases, changes, we see that in the history of the Protestantism, for example, where revolt against the Catholic Church represented itself as the return to the Bible as authority, as opposed to the traditional authority of the Christian Church as represented by the Catholic religion. And similarly, the fact that the Vilna Gaon was willing to impose his interpretation above and beyond the so-called barnacles that had accreted onto the body of the halacha represented no less a revolution in halachic behavior. In other words, the establishment of the Lithuanian yeshivot and as a counterbalance to Hasidim, just as at the end of the last third of the 19th century, the creation of Orthodox Judaism as a response to the Reform movement, both Orthodox and Reform, or the behavior following the Vilna Gaon and the Lithuanian yeshivas versus the Hasidim, all four of these are creations of the time which all represent deviations from the traditional mode of Jewish society as it existed for centuries. So on that I agree with Professor Katz, that one has to regard the things that were taking place. One shouldn't merely regard the changes that we've seen in our own lifetime, the extreme move to the right, as something that's only happened now. This was a response that has been taking place since the end of the 18th century through the end of the 20th century. Where I disagree with Professor Katz is I don't believe that traditional society ever was as stable as he portrayed it, because we have seen substantial changes that have taken place. The most substantial, the most drastic change, to my mind, and I try to engage you in conversation on this point many times, The most drastic change that we were studying last year was the issue of when this Kabbalah Shabbat, when does Shabbat begin and when does it end? There was a drastic shift in the 16th century, which affected all of Eastern Europe, and this is something which was occurring at the high point of traditional Jewish society, so that therefore we have, on the one hand, so let's, I'm running well over time. The point that he makes is that there was eventually a substantial influence of the Kabbalah, not immediately, but in the 17th and 18th century, there was an advance of the influence of Kabbalah to change halakhic practice, primarily as the result of the attack of by specific, very devoted individuals like Emmanuel Chayriki or Mochen Nachman Azariah Afano, that these achieved success in Italy where society was unstable because of the fact that there were just different communities mixing in the same city, but had no real impact on Ashkenazi communities until the end of the 18th, beginning of the 19th century, when the traditional society itself began to collapse, with the creation in Eastern Europe of the two blocks, the followers of the Vilna Gaon on the one hand, and the Hasidim on the other. And I think that there, all of these points are well taken. The one place which I disagree with him is that I don't believe that the traditional societies were ever all that stable in terms of, the, of their actual behavior and practice. Yes?
I use your question. What about the Hassan Sofer?
What about the Hassan Sofer? Well, as far as...